If you're just tuning in, this is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. Today in the studio, we have three of the candidates for Kenai City Council, James Baisden, Alex Dothit, and Deborah Sonart. So we've alluded to COVID in a couple different ways, but we haven't actually really talked about it directly yet. So I guess what I would ask is, what do you see as the city's role in the COVID pandemic or in a disaster kind of this magnitude? How can the city play a role? Maybe, Deborah, we can start with you here.
The city can play a role by allowing its citizens to decide what is the best pathway for themselves and their families. I don't think it is government's job to step in and tell a family, to tell parents what to do with their children, what to do with their own health care. I think these are decisions that need to be made between parents for their children and between people and their doctors. And any role that government would take to step in and mandate health care decisions for its citizens, I'm pretty hesitant on that because I think those are personal choices that people need to make for themselves and their families, and they need to make them with their doctors, not with a government official who has no medical background.
Alex, what about you?
I agree with a lot of that. The role of government in the city of aspect, I would believe, would be just to help inform people so they can make the best decision. Give information out there so everybody can make their own decision on what they feel is most critical for their needs at the time. And the city just needs to stay as, lead by example and allow people to have the most informed decision possible. Whether just showing, good sanitation practices so that all the businesses maybe help give out pamphlets and those kind of things, and allow people to make the choices that they feel are informed decisions. And just the city should help make sure there's positive data out there that is backed up by actual facts, and just allow that to be out there for the public to make their own decisions on.
Thank you. What about you, James?
Well, good topic. I mean, the assembly meeting last night, this was a major issue. Had a lot of people come out, and we're talking about mandates. And, the city of Kenai being a home rule city, they do have powers that if you have certain council members and you've got a certain number of council members that want to exercise those powers, they can put mandates in place. Probably one of the main reasons why I'm sitting here right now is because I worry about that. All you have to do is look around at some of the other smaller cities in our borough and the mandates that they put on the people in those areas. And the city of Kenai could do the same thing in a school district, basically. Wants somebody to point to. So if the city of Kenai does a mandate, then the school board would follow it because it's inside the city. So you don't think it's coming. What's coming is we're going to see from our federal government down to our state governments, employees that are going to be forced to vaccinate. You'd have never thought you'd have saw this coming. And it worries me about the freedoms that that we're losing right in front of us, and it seems like we can't slow this train down.
It sounds like you're all kind of aligned in a lot of ways on some of these points. What's one thing that differentiates you from the other candidates running? Who wants to start with that one?
I'm old.
James, do you want to start with that one?
You know what? I think the city of Kenai is in great shape with the five candidates that's running. I'm happy with the five people that the other two that you've interviewed and including myself and the two that are here. I think that this shows that there's a lot of involvement this year. You look at any of the seats where the city council, assembly, school district, there's not many seats being run unopposed because people are worried about the intrusiveness of government. And I think that's the main topic right now. Everybody is worried about that. We're dealing with the pandemic. I am for anybody that wants to wear a mask. I'm for anybody that wants to get vaccinations. I'm not an anti-vax person. I don't want government mandates. I don't want people to lose their jobs because they decide not to for whatever reasons. I've had to have conversations with people about my family status that I should not have to have conversations with. And now it's become good and bad. If you've been vaccinated, you're good. And if you haven't, you're bad. And that's not a good place for us to be. I don't know how we get past that. I don't know if we ever get back to what normal is. And that's what concerns me the most.
It sounds like that's something that kind of you all share in common, that concern. James, is there anything that in that regard or in any other regard that you think you kind of maybe take a different stance than some of the other candidates who are running?
Probably not dealing with those issues. I think we're going to be all pretty similar, because of the environment that we're in. Whether like Deborah, who's been in the school district and been around our children, and Alex having his kids in school, and you know, probably one of our biggest concerns is the effect that we can have on our children's ability to stay here locally and be productive and lead good lives. And city government, as much as anything, can have consequences if they don't do the right things with these decisions. So. It's not all just about money. It's not all just about, the finances. It's about having just common sense people in place that hopefully will just keep government limited, keep it pushed back. If you're waiting on government to solve your problems, you're going to be very unhappy.
Alex, what about you? What differentiates you from the other candidates in the field?
Well, I guess as James would say, I'm not as old. Some mornings I feel like it, but I'm... currently, as far as the new candidates go, I'm the youngest one running. Just gives a different perspective. Being actively working in the community with running my business and having four young children just gives a little bit different perspective. And I think that's an important side of things, to have, you know, a whole spectrum on the board that's making your decisions for your community, so you can see a little bit from every angle, and having a different vision possibly if you're involved in the government or the city in this facet or that facet. And where you're at in the actual economy of the city, being involved as a small business owner, being a little bit younger, seeing how the city's changed over the last few years and where it's leading and what I want to see in the future might be different than somebody that's in a different part of their life. So that's where I'm at, is just that different age bracket and a different viewpoints possibly from there.
Deborah, I'm going to turn the same question to you. What differentiates you from the other candidates running for these seats?
It would be that I don't really have a government background, even though I worked for the government for 34 years. What I do see, though, with the five people that are running for these two seats, I see five conservative people. That, to me, just, it says a lot. Because you have five strong people, and as a conservative person, typically our personality is such, because we are conservative, we simply want to do our jobs to our best ability. We want to raise our families, and we don't want government telling us how to do that. We don't want other people telling us how to do that. And we have literally been stepped on, it seems like, our toes, our bodies, everything, for the past couple of years through this whole pandemic. If you want to wear a mask, great, I have no problem with that. If you want to get the vaccine, that's your personal choice. But to turn around then and make mandates that everybody has to be the same, everybody has to wear the mask, everybody has to get the vaccine. And if you choose a different path, if you say no, then all of a sudden you're being ostracized. And that is, I think, probably the main reason, maybe even more so than economics, that you have five strong conservative people standing up running for these two seats. I see it as somewhat of a backlash from what we have all experienced in the last couple of years. And conservative people tend to, like I say, take care of their own business. And as long as you don't bother me, you stay on your side and let me do my thing, I'm okay. But it's time that conservative people have to stand up and make their voice heard. Otherwise, our freedoms are going to keep being infringed upon. They're going to be keep taken away. So, I mean, I am all about freedom and small government, and there you have it.
Thank you. That's interesting that you think that there's that has to do with backlash. That's interesting. Yeah, to kind of now pivot to something we haven't really talked very much about, and James, you actually brought this up, is Soldotna and Kenai have been talking a little bit about partnering up on those dispatch services, and I kind of want to hear each of your thoughts on that. And maybe, James, we'll start with you on this one because you were the one who brought it up. What are your thoughts on a partnership like that?
Well, being a dispatcher is probably one of the most difficult public safety jobs you can have. Very stressful. I don't want to see the city of Kenai put more stress on the employees. Taking on another agency the size of the police department in Soldotna will definitely put more stress on them. The city of Kenai will have to take on the burden of more employees. And the city of Soldotna will have to cover some of the cost. The biggest issue that I have is also the safety of dispatch. And once you get into the dispatch realm and you see how it's dealt with, if you've got your fire department being dispatched by one dispatch center and your police department by another dispatch center, it hurts the communications that takes place on an emergency call. And there's just so many things that can go wrong on a call that you want to have basically the same people in the same room working on it. It's not just about money. And if it's just about money, it'd be very easy. The city of Kenai and Soldotna could join together, and the city of Kenai probably can cut some costs and charge those costs to the city of Soldotna. But there's got to be more to that. And as they move forward with it, I want to make sure that they bring in the right people to ask the right questions.
Thank you. Deborah, do you have thoughts on a potential dispatch services partnership between the cities?
I would have to look into it. I will tell you, though, that my household has been recipients of the services of 911 over the years. And I'm very pleased with the services that we have had. And I would only want to improve them and not infringe upon those services. If putting together city dispatchers looks good on paper because it comes out with a smaller bottom line, is that price tag, is that savings worth the lives of people? And we are there because of the people. The people elect us, the people vote us in, we are there for the people. And I come back, every decision I make comes back to what is good for the people. Will this help the people? Will this benefit the people? And for me, it's not always about the bottom line.
Alex?
I wholeheartedly agree with James on this one. I've been on the other side of where I was in public safety for a while there, and having a dispatch center is crucial. They're your lifeline, and fire and police work directly together, and if it's going to mean both for the city of Soldotna and Kenai having any kind of a lapse of communication there, I would not agree with this. I would need to be doing a lot more research in it. I would like to be involved in the decision-making process of this. The city of Kenai has a great dispatch center, some amazing employees that have been there a long time. It is an excruciating, stressful job, and if it added more burden to them, I would definitely not agree with that at all. And I think that any kind of communication that might be lost by trying to save a buck would be greatly hurt our community, and I'd really like to see more about this before it becomes finalized for sure.
Speaking of budgets and kind of saving money, are there any things that you think the city could do to pare down its budget, or any programs that you'd like to see more funding go to? Any kind of thoughts on the way the city is currently structuring its budget that maybe you do a little differently? Maybe Alex, we'll start with you on this one.
I had a meeting with the city manager and looked over the budget for the city. And as a city goes, I think we're doing pretty darn good, honestly. Our revenues are up from 2019 by, they're saying, almost 16%. One thing kind of surprised me is even hotels and stuff like that, the tax revenue was up from 2019 by like 4 or 5%. So we're showing, you know, growth in the city. I know Paul said he's very good with a budget, it seems like. He's making some wise choices there. He's really strong on trying to save the city money, and he's made a pretty strong budget, and in the, his foresight for going forward looks like it's got a pretty good plan. I really don't see anything that stands out astronomically as this is a bad idea. Maybe as I become more involved with the board, it would see some issues there. And I definitely feel that, you know, keeping government as effective as possible is good. But right now, I think the city's actually is doing pretty good. They're keeping their debt ceiling way down. I would say I'm not speaking from personally, but I would say as little of debt as we have, it's pretty amazing for a city our size to have that small amount of actual debt window on our hands. So I was pretty impressed with the budget of the city right now.
Deborah, thoughts on the city's budget?
I was surprised at how lean it is. There's really not a lot of extra in it. It looks efficient. There are two permanent funds, one to support the airport operations and one to help support the general fund operations. And that was something I learned with my meeting sitting down with Mr. Ostrander. I had no clue that the city had that. And I thought that was pretty impressive that somebody had the foresight to put together permanent funds like that, to invest them, and then to be able to use the growth from those funds to help the airport operations and to help the general fund, because ultimately that means less taxes for the people. The budget looked good. It was impressive. And like Alex said, the city of Kenai is not in debt. It seems to be running smoothly, and obviously that is kudos to people ahead of us. And again, if once we're sitting there and we're working through it, I'm sure we would see issues and would come up with it. But from what I saw, it seems like a pretty good start.
James?
Probably the biggest issue with any municipal budget is going to be the cost of personnel, wages and benefits. What I typically like to look at is, you know, are we maintaining our employees? Are the employees staying with us long term? It does appear that. So I would say that we're probably in a pretty good place when it comes to paying employees. Going forward, one of the big issues that we all have here in the state is the PERS contribution. That's a big issue when it comes to the retirement account and the percentage that's paid from the state, the percentage that's paid for by the city of Kenai. Going forward, if the state doesn't get their fiscal house in order, it's going to be pushed down to more local governments going to have to pay for it. Probably the other issue that we're going to be dealing with is capital projects. We all used to be able to receive lots of money from the state for capital projects. That's pretty much gone away. So budgets going forward, whoever's elected is going to have to look for ways to fund capital projects for the city. We're no longer going to probably see what we have seen in the past.
We have about 10 minutes left. So I'd just like to ask a couple more questions. And I'd like to ask all of you this. What do you think is the biggest problem facing the city right now? I don't know who wants to start with that one, but I want to open that up to all of you. Maybe James will start with you on this one. The biggest problem facing the city at this moment.
The biggest issue that the city has tried to solve for the last 30 years is going to be stabilization of the bluff and the funding that takes place for that. Where that comes from and how we fix that issue. It's not going away, and it's going to continue to be a problem, and that's probably number one project that has to be fixed. And then number two is trying to bring our business sector in and involve them on how the city of Kenai can better suit businesses to come here and open up in our city. How can we revitalize that and incentivize that to make that better? Is it through tax incentives? Is it through, reduced property tax? Whatever it is, we need to come up with ways that we get more businesses involved in the city.
Alex, what do you think is the biggest problem facing the city right now?
You know, I agree with James. You know, there's the bluff erosion project's a big project, and they're working forward on that. And it's great to see that moving forward. A couple of the things I look at are the oncoming looming dead trees everywhere, the spruce bark beetle abatement projects that are coming up, and the need for our community to be able to help with that. I know the borough sounds like they've gotten some, applied for some funds to help with that. There's several entities. The Soldotna has applied for some funds. I'm not sure if the Kenai has yet, but I know it's on the forefront, hopefully, to try to get something help with making a plan forward to deal with all the dead trees, not just on city lands, but hopefully we can make a plan forward to help out with the private landowner. You know, the city has a lot of lands that maybe as little as just a place to dump the tree brush for now, so we don't all have to go over to Soldotna every time to dump tree brush would be great. Those are just little things that we might be able to do forward on that. But as far as large things also would just be a big thing that's coming out, and we're going to have a land study coming out, I think, next week, next council meeting. It'll be interesting to see. The city owns a huge amount of land. And I think that land study hopefully will show that we can hire to, it would help along with what James said about getting businesses in the city, seeing if what lands the city can start to sell or incentivize to be able to encourage growth in the city by all these over 300 lots, I believe is what they were roughly saying, that the city owns, that could be being utilized by small businesses and maybe some larger businesses. And it'd be interesting to see what that land study proposes and which pieces they're going to be up for selling or leasing or either one of those.
Thank you. And Deborah, biggest problem facing the city today?
Small businesses, attracting them, giving them incentives to come in, open up, and get rolling. The last biggest thing that I remember seeing was Walmart back in 2010. That's 11 years ago. But that has already been spoken to, and the spruce trees have already been spoken to. So I'm going to actually bring up a third topic. I'm not sure it's the biggest, but I do feel it's important, and that is our city water. It has improved over the years. I remember the years when the water was brown. There was so much tannin in it. And come March or April, when the ground started thawing, you'd really see the brown water come through. Well, the city took care of that. They used technology, they filtered it, and it was good, it was great. My concern with the water now is the arsenic levels. It's within the approved ranges, but I don't necessarily buy what the government tells me about approved ranges. And the wells over off of Beaver Loop were chosen because they had less arsenic in them than the ones out north. That's good. That's great. That's what we need. But I would like to see the arsenic levels lowered even further, and I would like to explore the possibility of what technology is out there in the way of a water filtration system that could bring down those arsenic levels before getting to the people. I do think it's an issue. My husband and I, we do an annual hair tissue analysis with our doctor, and every year, our arsenic levels are at a dangerous level. So I look at that and I think, okay, where is this coming from? And the only thing I can think of is the water. And the city sends out a water report pretty much every year. And I don't know if people look at it or read it, but it's a little brochure pamphlet. And I sit down and I read the front and back of it. And I look at the levels. And arsenic, for whatever reason, is an ongoing issue with our ground here on the peninsula. So it's just, I think it's something that we need to look at.
Thank you. Thank you all for your thoughtful answers on that question. We only have a few minutes left, but quickly, I would just love to hear from each of you before we go. Closing remarks, anything you want voters to know about you, about your platform that hasn't already been said. Deborah, let's start with you on this one.
I am for the people, and I realize that the power of government resides with the people. The power of government does not reside with elected officials. We are there to serve the people, and the power is with the people.
Thank you. James, to you.
Thanks for hosting us today. I want to encourage everybody to get out and vote. This will be one of those low turnouts, most likely, because it doesn't have a lot of federal spots to be elected. So try to be 25 to 30% out there if you can of the elected people to come out. You've got five great candidates. You don't have any reason not to come out and vote. And look, you can find me on social media. You can give me a call, my cell number. If you have any questions, I'm sure the other candidates are just the same way. We want to be open to answer any of your questions that we can. And thanks for having us today.
And Alex, last to you, closing remarks.
Yes. Thanks for having us today. This is my first kind of radio appearance, and I appreciate it. There's a great topic, so it's good to meet and talk with everybody here. Really want to just say, you know, get out and vote. You know, and remember, too, a lot of people, it seems like, are under the impression there's only one spot. There are two seats available, so you got to pick your best two. So remember, there are two seats available. Make an informed decision about that. If you have any questions, feel free to give me a call. I'd love to answer and love to talk to you about your ideas. Definitely want to be open and try to help out whatever the community feels is best for the community.
Well, thank you all for being here today. A huge thank you to James Baisden, Deborah Sonart, and Alex Dothit for being here in the studio. This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Saldatna. You're tuned in to the Kenai Conversation. I'm Sabine Pooks.